welcome to Starting From The Pits. Joining me on today's episode is Gabriel Aubrey, a Frenchman through and through. Gabby is no stranger to the Le Mans podium. We had a great chat about his career in the past, how he's got to where he is today, and what he hopes for in the future. I will say, this episode was recorded prior to it being announced that Felipe Drugovich was going to replace Gabby in the ELMS series with Vector Sport. Everything he mentions about the ELMS championship this year obviously is no longer going ahead. And I really, really hope he finds a seat somewhere this season because he just has a talent that shouldn't be wasted. Anyways, I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hello? Can you hear me well?
All I good? Can hear you perfectly, loud and clear.
It's fucking amazing. Great. I'm really terrible with technology, so I'm just happy it works.
All good. All good. Great setup. Cool.
Thanks. Thank you very much. I just set up this from what I had left from the show that we shot last week.
Amazing.
It looks actually much better here than it did in the in the show, which is...
I feel honored.
I'm a little bit pissed, but I'm just getting better at it.
How are you today? Where are we joining you from?
I'm doing good, thank you very much. I'm in France, Paris right now. This is where I live. This is where I grew up also, and this is where I am right now.
Amazing, perfect. So you're... routine sort of when you get back home, what does that look like for you? Because you're obviously all over the place all the time. Do you even get a chance to unpack?
I did went to a point, especially in 2018. It's a year when I was racing in GP3, which is F3, current F3, LMP2 World Endurance Championship, the European Championship, and the Asian Championship, where I did 300 days abroad. And I was actually... counting the hours I had at home. I was like, oh, 9 hours at home. It's fucking great. Lovely.
Love that.
Lovely. Yeah. So I'm actually very happy that now I get to chill a little bit more and prioritize certain championships so I can perform better also. Because yeah. At that time, I wasn't performing well because of that, traveling too much and switching from one team to the other, one car to the other. So now my time at home are very chill. I cook a lot, drink a lot of wine with my friends, and just try to also disconnect a little bit from what the racing world is and get back to a normal life, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. Do you have a favorite, like a go-to wine to drink?
That's a strong topic right there. So it's a topic of many concern for French people. Which wine do you prefer to drink? Right now, I'm currently on a Bourgogne trend. I've been drinking that a lot, maybe too much, but it's also one of my passion. And being French, I don't know, you get that in the blood with the wine and with the food.
Yeah, yeah. Literally, you have like wine running through your veins at this point.
Possibly.
Amazing. Well, I feel like we've got a lot to cover, so let's get straight into it. Let's kind of go back to where you began. Born in Paris, as you said, you quickly became involved in car racing. How did you get into karting at such a young age?
Yeah, as you said, born and raised in Paris, started go-kart like I would say many other drivers. My dad put me into it. He wanted to do racing as well, but his father never really let him do that. And he had to work in a family company. So the day that he could allow me to do it, he just pushed me into a kart, which surprisingly, I hated it at the beginning.
Oh, really?
I hated it because I figured out that I'm more competitive than anything. And at the beginning, my first race, I finished obviously dead last.
Right.
And I didn't want to do that
anymore.
Because I was last. But instead of quitting, I actually keep pushing. And by the end of the first year, I finished third of the French championship. I was like nine or 10 years, you know, really small. And I think I actually enjoyed more the podium and the fact and the competition than the actual go-kart back then.
But right, okay.
Then, you know, one step take to lead you to another. And I quit regular school when I was 13 years old. So I was homeschooled from 13 until graduation when I was 18. Lived mostly in Italy because all the go-karts is Italian. So we all grew up together. That's the new generation of driver you see in F1 with Lando Norris. I wasn't driving with Max Verstappen, Charles Leclerc, Esteban Ocon, Pierre Gasly, Albon, Stroll. Like we literally, I can show you a picture where all these drivers were at the same place together. So funnily enough, we all of us grew up together from go-kart to single-seater, and they grew up to go to F1. I went to somewhere else because of apparent lack of talent, I would say.
Okay, that seems quite harsh.
No, but that's the truth. You know, I was competitive when I was in go-kart, but the likes of Charles Leclerc, Max Verstappen, Lando Norris, they were not simply good. They were a whole step above everyone
Right.
from the age of 13. And from the age of 13, we all knew that Max Verstappen would just kill everyone in F1. We all know that Lando Norris would be absolutely amazing in F1, and I wasn't part of these kids.
Okay, no, I get that. But obviously, you've kind of found your way in a different championship entirely. Like endurance racing, I've learned over the past 6 months, is entirely different to Formula One. So you've found your way there. Everything happens for a reason, surely.
Oh, I'm very happy, and this always been my dream to be at Le Mans.
Okay.
When I was 5 years old, I've been brought to Le Mans by my father and his friends and the family as a spectator. I was obviously five, and from that day, I said, "Wow, that's the best thing in the world." And this year is gonna be my 18th year in Le Mans. I've
Wow.
probably missed like two or three editions since then. I even went to Le Mans during my graduation test, my final test, because can't miss Le Mans.
Not?
That's it.
It's
That's
Le
right.
Mans,
That's right.
obviously.
So it's always been a dream for me. So I'm not salty over saying I didn't go to F1 because this, that. I wasn't going to go F1 anyway, and I was always happy to go to Le Mans because this is the reason I started racing, is the reason I keep racing today.
Okay, perfect. Because I often wonder, a lot of the time you hear about the endurance drivers, they are initially their initial trajectory is towards Formula One, and then they kind of take a sidestep. I've never really heard of people saying like, no, these are exactly the way, this is the path that I want to take to go to endurance racing. So it's good to hear that that is kind of where it all started for you.
It does for me because it's where my love for racing starts.
Yeah.
But I would say the ideal trajectory to join endurance racing, especially in hypercar class now, is to go as high as you can in the single seater ladder. Because the higher you go, the easier it is to then
Course.
drop back, I would say, divert
Yeah.
from the F1 dream. And when you see the hypercar class that is made of 15 different Formula One driver in it, it
Yeah.
just tells you that the level is really high, whether you would make it to F1 or not. But the higher you go into single seater, and I stopped in GP3 back then, the easier it is for you to go to endurance or anything else.
Yeah, definitely. So when you first stepped into one of those prototype cars, take me back to that day. What was your first initial thoughts and feelings?
My first ever prototype test was at Bahrain for the rookie test. It was 2017. I was driving for Alpine. I actually got into it almost by accident.
This seems to be a case with a lot of people.
I always dreamed of doing that, but I didn't thought that I would be doing that now. I was still aiming for a different team back then for the 2018 season. I was still in discussion for drive with RT GP, which
Right.
was do dominating the championship back then. And so I went to test in Bahrain with Alpine, and 2 weeks later the week later I was testing with RT in Abu Dhabi. My first test in the LMP2 was insane. I was shouting for the whole 5 laps first test because I was screaming in the car. I went from a Formula Renault 2.0 liter, which is the Freca now,
Yeah.
which is barely 200 horsepower.
Okay.
Very small steel brakes to a full-blown LMP2 of almost 600 horsepower, carbon brakes, which is pretty much going from a Freca to an F2. That's
Right.
the type of gap you have.
Okay.
I screamed for the entire first session. Like, what the fuck is that thing? How does it stay on track? The first braking zone, I was looking at my feet because the deceleration was so
Oh
hard.
my God.
I wasn't planning. I didn't plan that, but the day went great, and I was near matching the teammate I had, which was Nicolas Lapierre, which is a strong reference for people that someone has been in endurance for now over 20 years almost. So he's
Okay.
proper driver,
Almost your
and
lifetime.
don't tell him that
Oh,
he is gonna be horribly mad, although I keep reminding some of the driver that they could be my dad. I did remind Sébastien Bourdais, which is to me the best endurance driver there is right now, that
Yeah.
his first IndyCar championship he won, I was six.
Wounded, absolutely gutted.
He didn't spoke for the entire dinner.
Love that. You just got blanked.
He's a great man. He's a great guy.
Talk me through then the weekend of an endurance driver. Say you're at Le Mans, how does it pan out from start to finish for you?
Well, Le Mans is not even a weekend. It's a whole.
Well,
It's
yeah.
not even a day. It's not even a week. It's over almost 10 to 12 days you spend at the track. And when I say you spend it at the track, you literally don't leave the premise of the track because you sleep in the paddock. You
Okay.
sleep either in the RV or in the camp or in the camper
Yeah.
on the track, and you don't leave the gates of it. And it's I'll take a normal weekend, I would say, because Le Mans is just such a celebration. It's
Yeah.
completely different. And on a normal weekend, you would arrive on the Wednesday or the Thursday. If it's a flyaway race like Fuji in Japan, or Brazil, or Kota, you would fly a little earlier, trying to. If you have time to adapt in your schedule with the time difference, you do, because that hurts your performance a lot.
Yeah.
Sometimes you do not have it, and you do have to be on medication to try to sleep, but that's definitely suboptimal. And as pretty much as any race weekend, you would go with FP1, FP2, FP3,
Yeah.
qualifying, and then onto a race. But the difference here with any racing championship is that it's three drivers for the
Yeah.
same time that you would in F1. So you could actually be in a situation where you get into the car, having done maybe six lap in the car at the track
Right.
on the weekend, and then you'll be thrown into the race. There you go. Show us what you got. It's very particular. Sometimes you feel like you get into the race, you're not ready, and then by the end of the race, you've done pretty much like 80 laps in a row. So
That's
now you know
unreal.
what you're doing, but
Oh,
it's a
yeah.
bit late. It's a bit late in it.
Yeah, I know, definitely. Do you have a preferred stint to do? Like, do you prefer being the first driver out, or you, obviously, I know you rotate between yourselves throughout, but.
The two best parts of a race, an endurance race, are always the start and the finish.
Yeah.
You don't take much risk by doing the start because you know you're gonna be in a lot of situation. You can, it's a high risk, high rewarded situation. So if you crash in a 6 hours race, you do like an absolute dumb fuck
Yeah.
because it's a 6 hours race, and if you try to make it all in corner one,
Yeah.
that's not a clever strategy to do. And the end of the race could be literally the best moment ever because it's loaded with action. If you're fighting for a position, for a podium, for a win after 10 hours racing, and it happened to me in a race in Petit Le Mans where the race came down to the last chicane of the last lap of a 10 hours race.
My God. It's crazy how it all just comes down to that last lap almost a lot of the time. Like, I watched Daytona recently, and that was the last lap again for the hypercars. Unreal.
It was pretty much the same story than Daytona, where the leader was Mikkel Jensen and myself at the back. I was 12 seconds behind. There is 10, I had the best radio content ever. 10 laps, about 10 or 12 laps to go. The whole strategy got thrown away by one last safety car. And Mikkel in front of me had to save so much fuel compared to me. So I could push.
Right.
And my engineer went on the radio and said, "Okay, Gabriel, it's 10 laps to go. Carte blanche, you do whatever you want. That the car is yours, and if you have to fuck up the car on someone else just to make the pass,
Yeah, do
go
it.
ahead, like have fun." And
Love
I
that.
catch the 10 second because he was saving so much fuel, and I didn't have to, and I got to overtake him in the last corner of the last lap.
That
That's
must have been such
insane.
a good feeling.
So regardless of the length of the race, if the race is of good quality and you have amazing drivers on the field, you may still have some fight to do until the last corner of the last lap.
Love that. So, do you have a favorite track to go to that you're looking forward to the most?
Well, I think the ultimate goal of endurance is Le Mans. That
Of
track,
course. Let's take Le Mans out of the equation.
that just the atmosphere of it. Beside the track is actually great, but it's not that great to drive. It's just
Okay.
that it's just the atmosphere, and
Yeah.
we can talk about that later, but this race is like none other in the world. As
Yeah.
of race track, I would really put the track from Petit Le Mans, Road Atlanta,
Okay.
as one of the top because it's old school, it's very small, and it's one of those tracks, you know, where if you take risk and you get rewarded for it, but
Yeah.
if you do not manage the risk well, you will find the wall are much closer than you expect. And I did
That's
find
one way to
that.
put
I did find that the hard fucking way in Road Atlanta, and it is not fun.
Brilliant. No, completely get that. So obviously, Le Mans, you've driven there now. How many times have you driven there now?
I've done this race now 6 times as a
Six
race driver,
times. Okay.
mostly in the LMP2 category, so Le Mans Prototype 2, which is the smaller version of the hypercar that are being seen right now in the
Yeah.
100s Championship. It's basically a detuned hypercar
Got
with
you.
no hybrids. It's just one straight V8, no turbo. No, it's a very simplistic car, I would say.
Yeah.
But it's still, when it's full on, it still matches the Formula 2 performance.
Okay.
And the best lap time of an LMP2 in Spa-Francorchamps in 2018 would have qualified P4 in the F2 qualifying of the same season. So
Right.
the car is fairly strong, even though they're simplistic, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. So would you be able to like round up the almost the atmosphere at a Le Mans race in like a sentence?
Think about the 24 Hours of Le Mans, not as a race event, but as a festival. So
Yeah.
imagine Glastonbury
Yeah.
with road cars in the middle.
Honestly, that's a dream.
That's what it is. It's you don't go to 24 Hours of Le Mans as you're going to a race event. You come, you gather
Right.
with your friend, you sleep in the car,
Yeah.
you will watch the start. Obviously, there's a lot of fuss going on. You get the planes, you get the drivers, you get LeBron James. Yeah, you watch the race for an hour, and then you decide to go have some beers with your friends. Then you go to the market. Then you can have another beer. Have some crepes if you want. Then there is a
Yep, little
concert.
crap.
Then there's a concert on the other side of the track. There's always something happening.
Yeah.
And in the end, you may only spend, I don't know, 20 minutes of your 20% of your time actually watching races,
All right,
and
okay.
all the rest enjoying the event.
Got you. Yeah. So obviously you mentioned earlier you used to go there quite a lot as a child. That was sort of like where you found the love for racing. How was it then, your first time racing there? Was it kind of like a I've made it moment for you?
I am an emotional guy, so I can say that on my first lap I did cry. Like
As you should.
I did have a little bit like, fucking hell, I finally made it once.
Yeah, love that.
But the end of the race, whichever participation it is, if you finish this race, the exhaustion, and not just the exhaustion of the race, but the exhaustion of the whole 10 days working with the same people, you're gonna cry regardless of the
Yeah.
result. You're gonna cry if you finish. You're gonna cry if you don't finish. It's just gonna be emotionally hard to take whatever you do.
Yeah, definitely. And sort of, so you obviously then came vice world champion in the World Endurance Championship. Talk to me through that podium moment for you, because that must have been a pinch me moment as well.
Well, no, the funny thing is that is one of my worst memory ever, to be standing on
Oh,
a
God.
I know I feel like a prick right now saying that, and I
No.
realize afterward that it was at the same moment the worst and the best time of my life,
Got you.
because I finally get to stand on that podium, which is obviously insane. That was my dream since I'm 5, and on the other hand, I just lost the 24 Hours of Le Mans because of a puncture,
Right.
and I finished vice world champion. And when you know racing and you know races, second is the first of the last. Did I just cite Ricky Bobby Talladega Nights? Yeah, I did. Yeah, I just did. But it is true. The second one is the first of the last. And when you finish second and you've been working, we started the 24 hours at the with equal points than the guy who won the championship. So it was whoever
Right.
win this race is world champion. So the stakes are
Yeah.
high. And I can visualize the moment where I'm sitting on that pre-room, you know, pre-stage before the podium, and I'm just crying. Like, am I really crying before I get to that podium? Because I'm pissed. Moving on. But yeah, I did.
That's honestly that. Well, it makes sense because there's just so many emotions. It's so heightened at the time, isn't it? And obviously, I'm sure you look back now and you obviously do see it as a loss for you, but obviously it is a very proud moment as well.
I mean, it's a proud moment because I have the little trophy from the race just in front of
Exactly.
me. That is the most ridiculous trophy I've ever seen.
Was
It
it?
have you ever won a rental go-kart race?
No,
Because
no.
that's what it looks.
Oh, that's not that
Now they changed it and you get the actual
big.
bigger, but yeah, that's why, yeah.
It's still cute though.
So you're
I still be
standing on the
traveling.
podium with this in your head, like, what a shitty fucking day is.
Especially after the feeling you had as well. You were just like, right,
Oh,
brilliant.
and I mean, you have everyone congratulating you, rightfully so, but the only thing you have in your head is, I'm second. That's the only thing I had back then, but yeah.
In hindsight, you look back and you think, well, it wasn't that bad overall.
Well, I remember on the podium of that race, I was with my favorite driver ever, which is Loïc Duval, because when I was a kid, I was about 10 years old, I was on a pro grid of Le Mans, and he gave me his cap.
I love that.
And to share the same podium with him, I went on to be his teammate 2 years after, the year after that, actually. And I remember he went on that podium with his children on the podium,
Amazing.
and he told me, you cannot be sad on this podium because you never know how many times you're going to be on it. So
Yeah,
regardless
that's
of
a
your
great point.
position, just the fact of being here, you should be happy because you may never stand on that podium ever again.
Yeah.
So just enjoy it.
Yeah, that's
And he
such a
was
nice piece of advice.
right because I've never been on that podium again, but damn, I would kill someone to be there.
After Le Mans has been and done, I mean, there must be like a massive heavy come down from that.
There is a post-Le Mans syndrome that everyone gets, and it's actually got a name. It's the post-Le Mans syndrome. It's
Didn't know
fact.
that.
It's fact, because you've been working on a single event for over, I'm not even going to say over a month, but it's March, and we're already planning for Le Mans right now. So it is the talk of everyone for 4 months. And when it's gone, you're like, so what now?
Wow.
Like, what am I doing? Although you have usually a lot of professional driver do the IMSA Championship, which is the American Endurance Sports Car Championship. We all go to Watkins Glen, which is one of the major race, 6 hours race in the New York State, which is one of my
Oh.
favorite. It's one of my favorite track also. And you all got there like,
Yeah, you're all just in a slump.
what now? What now? What are we doing? And then it takes you a good week before you start to get back into the flow.
Yeah, definitely. So let's take you off the track then. What are you doing to kind of keep yourself going between races?
Well, you obviously have to train because it's a sport. It's a very particular sport because it's the only one where you do not create any movement when you're in the car. The only movement that you can have in the car, you're fully strapped. You just turn the steering wheel, and especially with the doors, we have very small place in our prototype cars. So imagine turning the wheel without lifting your left elbow. That is the space you have. That's if you want to try it, that's literally that small. So if you have to train that, it's pretty hard. But you train a lot like a triathlete, actually. With less hours because that correlates pretty well. So training is a lot of time when you're outside of your house. And then it depends on everyone. Myself, I like to do other stuff than racing because I feel like there's so much more to just the world and the life than cars. So I love to get out with my friends, drink a lot of wine. I actually like to get to the winery and do the wine with them and learn how to do it. Also how to cook, get into the kitchens and talk with chef. Talk with the coffee specialty. Like, I was actually just earlier at the final of the French Coffee Championship.
Oh my
It's
gosh, that's so cool.
very random,
I
but
didn't know that existed.
There is a whole world championship and stuff. It's insane. You
Oh
should visit
my
it. It's
gosh.
great.
I definitely will.
It's great. So, I mean, there's just so much out there that's not just racing, and that's one thing that I love with my career is that I get to travel with WEC to a lot of different places in the world every year. So every year I get to Japan. Okay, if I'm in Tokyo and I have time to stay for 3 more days, I'll stay in Tokyo. I'll eat at my friend's restaurant. We just discuss about beef or whatever, beef and wine and racing. Then they'll come to the race, and I
What a
get
great
to
conversation.
Austin, Texas, and we're gonna talk about beef again because they like barbecue. But
Austin's amazing for food. I would literally just go back to Austin just to have food.
I love how everything connects together. You know, this how people from the design, from like I'll bring my great friend Ted Gushue, for example, who's the head editor of Type 7, and he's into design. I may meet him in Zermatt in Switzerland, and the next week on the racetrack. Everything is connected, and if you just look out, you can find great things.
Yeah, definitely. And we were kind of discussing this between each other over messages earlier, how fashion is kind of making its way into the racing scene a bit more. How are you going to kind of bring this into World Endurance Championship and endurance racing? Because we need a bit of fashion in here.
Well, fashion definitely brings it, especially in F1, because F1 did something that's great, is that they humanized the driver. It's not just about, you know, I've had media training when I was a child. I started media training when I was 11, literally, and how to present yourself to the camera, how to talk, what's expected from a professional driver, especially in your communication, if something goes wrong with the team. And this whole thing is going a little bit to the trash now that we have overexposition from the driver, and the brands, especially with Formula One driver, are seeing pretty billboards to put their brands on top. And it's not just about having them to their show anymore, it's about having them wear their product. WEC is not yet there because we struggle to, you know, lead the championship with strong personality, because there are also so many drivers. But you still have people like Antonio Felix da Costa, and the championship maybe is realizing that right now. But we can still try to push boundaries. It's just going to take more time to do that. We're trying to find new collaboration between brands and teams, brand and driver. I'm trying to be in the middle of that, trying to almost act as a branding studio between teams, drivers, brand. There are ongoing collaboration that hopefully will start for Le Mans. We'll see where it goes, but it's an ongoing process, and I'm really looking forward to see how big we can turn the WEC and endurance sports car racing into.
Yeah, definitely. I know, obviously, like myself, I've come from Formula One and now I'm watching it. I feel like a lot of people are missing a trick by not watching endurance racing, but I think a lot of people are also slowly realizing that. And I feel like there's going to be a massive boom with it when Le Mans comes. It's going to get massive.
Yeah, I agree, man. It's also down to us. I do agree with the people that wants to start looking at WEC, IMSA, all these races. If you sat there in front of your television for 10 hours straight, it is boring. As fact, I personally love that. I wouldn't go through this
No,
pain
I love it
myself.
as well.
You're brave because it's long.
I just have
Is damn long, and I think it's up to us to bring a newer and fresh approach to the broadcast and how we present the racing, because I don't know how cool it is because I've been living in it for
life.
now almost 20 years. If we don't change our approach, we won't bring new fans into it, and
Exactly.
just I don't even want to create and to fake it, but just explain why is it cool to get your friends together. Take a train to Le Mans, take a train to Spa-Francorchamps, or take a train to Portimão, just to cite the European races, and do the weekend there, especially in Portimão. Like, what? How does it feel to be at the weekend where you get near the sea in Portimão? You have tons of coffee shop, you have tons of restaurants, of winery, of bars. Then you get to see a race for 2, 3 hours, then get to do something else out there. And we don't show the whole experience unless you've been at the racetrack. For one of the WEC, you don't know how cool it is. So it's our job, in my opinion, to show that, and why is it cool to come to the race, and also why do we exist and why do we race? It's not just about about cars driving around. There are more meaningful reasons for us to exist, and we just have to explain it.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree. I feel like once people get that into World Endurance Championship, they're hooked. I'm one of those people.
I mean, look at this fact. It's a fact that I bring really often because I'm sure even drivers in the WEC doesn't know about that. 100% of the fuel used at the 24 hours of Le Mans and the whole season do not come from fossil energy.
Oh, wow.
100% synthetic fuel that is being made using byproducts of French winery from Bordeaux. So they use the
Love
grape,
that.
and after the process that is being used to create the alcohol, they get the byproduct of it. Use a lot of very complicated process to it, which are very very confidential, I assume. And this turns into fuel that are being used in our car without any difference to the fuel that we've been using for the past 5 years.
How did not more people know about that? That is insane.
That's right. And this comes to why do we exist as a racing entity is we are here to create, to develop, and to push the boundary of mobility. A
Absolutely.
lot of the stuff that you see on your road car right now, I'm gonna cite the brake disc, I'm gonna cite the fog lights, for instance, have been created at Le Mans.
Wow, that is
They've been
so
created at Le
incredible.
Mans. The whole point of Le Mans is to bring new technology, and that's the reason of partly the reason of why it's so hard to explain what hypercar is because you have many different idea of what a race car could be, and they're all fighting to create the most efficient and the most economical way to race, which
That
you're going
is,
to see into your road car later.
I'll be checking it out. Yeah, that's so cool. I had no idea about that. That is very interesting.
That's what I'm saying. We don't need to sugarcoat it with fake drama, whatever. Just need to tell the story of what we're doing. It's going to be well enough to get people to understand why we are doing that. There is a why.
Let's bring you into the present day now then. I've seen you've been doing a little bit of TV work. How's that been going for you?
I've actually been doing more TV work than racing, which pisses me off a little, not gonna lie. I miss my car, and I hope I would see it pretty soon. But I'm just very happy to be behind the screen now, because first of all, you discover a new job. Being behind the screen is a complete job. Being a consultant is pretty hard to speak, especially when you're doing live TV with you on set. You got TVs everywhere, and when you see the anchors from L'Équipe, from big broadcast channel, the way they work with people speaking in their ears, them not stuttering and still keeping the timeline, keeping the energy up, it's insane to see. So I'm learning that. I'm not going to change my job to become a consultant or an anchor. I'm still a race driver. That's what I'm going to do for another couple of years. But I like to do it, and people have been pretty receptive about my work, so I'll just keep doing that. I'm having fun, and if it just helps grow the sport, I'm happy to do that.
Perfect. Yeah, that's great. And obviously, you've launched your podcast as well recently. Talk to me about how that kind of came about.
We've launched that podcast, and it's a show. It's meant to be a visual show, so there are image that have not been released yet because I've been dealing with a lot of shit for the past 4 days, but it was due to release on Saturday. Not gonna lie, it's the first pilot episode, so I've been saying it's our prologue, it's our FP1, you know,
Yeah, got you.
because the visuals from the first show, and I was in charge of it, so I can say it, they do makes me want to take my eyeball out with a spoon. It looks horrible, like I want to just poke my eyes with the fork.
Heard that saying.
It's just it hurts, but we'll get to there. Why did I created this is because simply, I want to tell the story not only of what happened to the race, but to who are the people and the humans behind the race, and why did certain decision happens, and why there's so many stories that has to be told that you cannot see on the TV. Because when you speak on the TV for 10 hours, it's just cars going around, which in my opinion is completely boring. if you get to know why this car is doing that, why this team has decided to switch his driver every stint, why BMW decided to keep their driver for fucking 3 hours in a row roasting in it, and then actually get the guy who's in charge of that to answer that question. It's great. And I've also been doing that because I have so many friends that's outside of racing that are legit curious about what I'm doing. And when I want to present them and to explain them, there are no creators today that explain simply to the broadest people as possible what are we doing. They all get into very complex discussion about BOP, about why this car is political, the weight of this car, but this one has plus 0.3 kilowatts. I'm lost. Like, and so are all my friends. After 5 minutes of this, they're lost. So I want to speak to my best friend who's been to the racetrack once at Le Mans, and he spent more time drinking than watching the cars. So if he wants to understand, and it's a great way to do, I would do the same if I was in his position. I want to explain to him what I'm doing it, what are we doing, and what's the reason we're doing it.
Yeah, I agree. There's definitely that kind of bridge, the gap to the bridge missing in the thought in terms of endurance racing. I know I've sort of tried to be kind of that person to bring across from a beginner's point of view of not really knowing much. But like you said, everybody gets so in depth about it. And I'm sat there and I'm like, there's no way I can make this beginner friendly because I just don't know what I'm talking about.
And most of the time, I'm gonna say something controversial here, but here I go. Most of the time, their facts are wrong. And it's honestly not interesting to someone that's not been at the track already. And if the goal is to bring newcomers to the track and open the doors of the sport, then you have to imagine. I was actually scared of releasing that because I was expecting insiders and already existing fan base to go at my neck saying, but he's very simplistic, you're talking too much about I don't need to be explained what the World Endurance Championship is. I already know it is. Yeah, but
Yeah, well, it's not for you then.
I'm not talking to you. Exactly. I'm not talking to you. If you already know what I'm saying, go listen to someone else. They are creating some great stuff. Go listen to that. But it's just not for you then. And I'm fine with it.
I think we're definitely missing that in this space, and I'm really looking for, although I don't speak French, I've got Duolingo, I'm learning, I'm trying my best.
I did, being honest, I did try to create that podcast being only French, my bad. I did try to create it, first of all, in English. And the cast I had in French was just so great. And we're all four friends. And when I start calling them one by one, each of them told me that they all called each other to say they need to do something together.
Love that.
So I just ended up being the binding element to it all. Buy four microphone, two cameras, put it on the side of the room, and let's chat. And that's what happened. We got a lot of work to create better quality. And when you're competitive, you see all of the details that you need to improve. So I can't say I'm happy right now about the product that we released, but I'm very happy about the reaction of the people to it.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess that gives you a benchmark of where to go from the start. Then you can look back and be like, oh, actually, we've done well since then.
That's the type of stuff they bring to you like 30 years later saying, hey, look, that's your beginner on
Remember
TV.
this?
I'm like, yeah, fucking no, thank you. I'm horribly embarrassed by this image. Thanks for bringing it up. I've been pitching this idea to a lot of people from already a couple of months ago, like almost a year. And when you try to get support, it's people are gonna tell you, ah, it's a great idea, blah blah, we should talk. But unless you actually bring a finished product and actually show them the tone that you want to get, you don't really get the attention that I believe this path, because it's not just an idea. I'm not creating anything. There's nothing new in what I do. Just take a very broad approach to what's been already done that may look simplest to people that are knowledgeable already. There's nothing new. We just take it from the start, want to do something nice, and I know it will get a lot better fairly soon.
Amazing. So let's talk about you right now then. You said you were missing your car earlier. When are you next jumping back in it?
I'm supposed to drive next week. The first test of the ELMS Championship is going to be next week. There may be some adjustment to that currently ongoing, but the first race is scheduled to be on April, second week of April. So I think it's the 18th. I am terrible at dates, but it's somewhere there. You should check the ELMS championship. So this is
Even
where you
ELMS
should
this
see me.
year.
Yes. So my prom will
Stupid
be
question.
ELMS and Le Mans. I should have said that earlier, actually.
No, it's fine.
So only European championship. The team and I, Vector Sport, were supposed to drive in hypercar class until some disagreement between our manufacturer and the team happened, and
Right.
we ended up without the program. So we decided to regroup, stay in LMP2, which we did fairly well because the last WEC race, I ended up leading the pack with 50-second gap after two stints.
Amazing.
So the performance was there, and I was just happy to perform. You know, last year with qualifying fourth at Le Mans, which is my best results in qualifying. Four time in the top five in qualifying, including a second place for a single thousand of a second,
Oh my
zero
gosh.
pole position, which pissed me off a lot. And yeah, you can see that video on YouTube. They call it WEC All Access, so they kind of try to do like a
Right.
Netflix kind of thing. And the longest moment I've been broadcasted is me swearing in French. There you go. Thank you.
Claim to fame. Love that.
Yeah. I'm great at
Brilliant.
swearing in French. You'll learn by that.
I love that. No, I feel like I've got a good perspective of you this interview. I mean, you've not minced your words at all, so that's been great.
Well, it's something I don't really know. I don't know how to lie. I'm pretty direct. So that's why I have a great relationship with journalists.
Yeah, of course.
But I mean, I always try to say what I think. And I do believe that when I say it, I'm right. If I say it publicly, at least. And if I always take this approach, if I said something publicly and I'm wrong, and you corrected me and prove it, I will also come publicly and say that I was wrong. So
Yeah.
if you keep that honest relationship, because it's too easy to say a lot of shit on the
Yeah.
internet and then just get a call and say, "Hey, sorry, I didn't mean that," or "Sorry, it was false," just privately, that's too easy, in my opinion. If
Yeah.
I say something that is wrong, and you come with proof that I'm wrong, you have to come up publicly the same way that you did, apologizing and establishing the truth. So that's the approach I take, and I hope people just like the honesty.
Yeah, no, I love that. That is, it's a good approach to have because people then become, they kind of become a little bit better connected to you as well.
It's only fair, you know. It's I'm not even trying to bring a character or create something.
No.
It's just who I am. Maybe I will have takes that people won't have. But it's
Yeah.
called a personal take, and everyone have one. Is that right? I do have one that sometimes is a bit off from everyone, but I will say it, and I will live up to it at least.
Amazing. So before I end my episodes, I always like to ask my guest. I have a Spotify playlist where it's called the Garage Radio, and I like to ask my guest sort of what is a song that gets you pumped up? What is the song that before you get in the car, that's what you want to listen to?
Number one song, I have a playlist that's called Game Time.
I love
That's
that.
the Game Time with a picture of LeBron James. That playlist, I have to come on the record for that because I've been called a fanboy heading into LeBron James at Le Mans this year. I'm not. This playlist has been there since 2018, and LeBron James has been the face of it. Number one song is well, I just forget about the full name of it. Drake and Rick Ross, Money in the Grave,
Okay.
because that song got released on a Saturday evening. It was a celebration of the Toronto Raptors win in NBA,
Okay.
and it got released during the 24 hours of Le Mans 2019.
Love that.
So
Perfect.
I came out the car, destroyed, and I pick up my phone and I see new Drake and Rick Ross song, and I've been blasting it.
Babe.
That's right. And I just went back in the game and went not lifting up. And that song is a cool memory from that song.
Amazing, that's perfect. Well, I feel like that was a great way to wrap the episode up. Thank you so much for joining me. This has been wonderful.
Well, thanks for having me. I enjoy talking with you, and explaining that sport to everyone is great. So if you need me here again, I'll be there.